This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. What better way to start 2024 than by bringing awareness to your BFRB? My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off the replacement training bundle.
I'm Olivia. I'm autistic and ADHD, and my BFRBs are trichotillomania and dermatillomania.
How old were you when you started both of your BFRBs? Did they come at the same time or kind of later in life?
It started with hair pulling at age 7, and it began with eyelashes, and then it quickly moved to eyebrows and my scalp. The skin picking is definitely not as significant as the hair pulling. So it kind of goes hand in hand. So I would say it didn't really have a separate timeline. They sort of coexist together.
When you were younger and you first started pulling out your eyelashes, do you remember that moment or things that happened kind of after that?
I do vividly remember sitting on the couch at home and sort of thinking, oh my word, why am I doing this? And it began with eyelashes. And it was kind of a weird moment because I didn't know whether it was a good thing, whether it was a bad thing, whether it was normal, whether it was something that other people do. And so it was a definite feeling of almost confusion, really, I think for me.
After that moment, did you tell your parents or reach out to like friends at school or anything?
I very much went inward with it, so I was hiding it. My parents did bring it to my attention a few times, and it kind of got to the stage where I thought, I'm going to have to hide it because my parents were very concerned and they didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was, and other people were mentioning it. So, like at school, the head teacher mentioned it to my parents. My regular teacher mentioned it, friends would mention it. And I definitely think that there wasn't as much information back then. It was about 13 years ago when I was 7, so when I first started. So it was kind of just put down to a bad habit. And my parents had looked online and it said that sometimes children grow out of these things, and the best thing to do is not to mention it because it could make it worse. And so that's kind of the path we went down. But I did everything I could to hide it.
What are some of the things that you did do to try to hide it?
Not look at my parents in the face, not look at other people in the face. I would stay in my room a lot and, very, very quickly pass by people and try not to draw any attention to my face, my hair, hiding it that way. Sometimes when I got a little bit older, I would use makeup, like mascara on my eyelashes to try and make them look fuller, things like that, or wearing a hat.
I know that going to school for me personally was so hard. I didn't want to go to school because I knew that people would notice and say something. Do you have any like vivid memories of children kind of asking you, "Hey, why do you have no eyelashes?"
I do have memories. I remember especially when I was a little bit older, and it really started with my scalp. It really started on my hairline, and that was when you could notice there was something. And a few people brought it up, and I was kind of scrambling around trying to find a way to change the topic or come up with a reason. It was really, really anxiety inducing, not being able to explain what it was.
I noticed that for me, when I would get approached at school or someone mentioned something, that night I'm pulling much more because I'm having all these heavy, intense feelings. Was that something that you did as well?
Definitely, yeah. I think the more it was not so much exposed, but the more I felt it was exposed or somebody mentioned it, the worse it would become because it kind of carried on with that spiral of why am I doing this? Why does nobody else seem to do this? Why is it me? And I kind of felt a bit freakish. I think that's the word at the time that I would have described myself as feeling. And so, yeah, like you say, it just made the pulling worse.
And I love that your parents took a hands-off approach, not bringing it up to see, hey, is my daughter going to grow out of this? When it seemed like you weren't going to grow out of this, did they change their method at all?
Yes, yeah, definitely. It was actually, and I'm very grateful to my parents for this, that they had that hands-off approach, but then waited for me to come forward and not sort of confess, but if I wanted the help, then they wanted me to feel ready to ask for that. So it was, I still remember it now to this day. It was when I was 16. It was during COVID, during the lockdown, and it had got to a point for me where it was only getting worse. And I thought to myself, I can't hide this forever. I need help. I want to understand what this is now. And so I called my mum into the bathroom, and I can literally feel it now, that horrible sense of, anxiety and suspense, thinking, what's this reaction going to be? And I said, look, mum, I can't stop pulling my hair out. I don't know what's wrong. I need help. And to my relief, it was met with compassion, love, and care, which I am so grateful for. And that was the first time that I learned that hair pulling has a name and there's a reason, and I'm not alone. So, yeah, that's how it was sort of known. That's how it was made known to me and my parents. And from then on, it was a learning journey of learning what this is and how I can cope. And so it wasn't long after that that my mum agreed to buzz my hair as well to make it a little bit more manageable. So ever since then, I'm very grateful for their help and their support.
When you looked it up, did you think about, maybe seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist for trichotillomania?
Yes, absolutely. It was definitely something I wanted to take to therapy and explore. However, at the time in our local area, I had to wait until I was 18 to see a therapist. So I did wait until I was 18 and then I went to see a therapist. But there were times in between that period of age 16 and 18 where I was able to speak to doctors or speak to other services for teens. And unfortunately, I found that a lot of them, if not all of them, had never even heard of trichotillomania. They couldn't pronounce it. And so it felt as if I was asking for help, but I was also having to educate them on my condition, and that was quite disheartening.
Oh, yes, that is something that happened to me quite a few times. And it almost, luckily it didn't have this effect on me, but it almost made me say, should I not even continue looking for help? Because every time I'm seeing someone, I'm explaining to them. And that was really tough.
Yeah, not easy at all, especially when you're new to it and you're looking for those answers. It almost provokes a sense of hopelessness in a way because you think, well, even if these professionals don't know what it is, how am I going to learn to deal with it?
I love that you took into your own hands managing your hair by buzzing your head. Can you tell me more about that decision and experience for you?
It was quite a big change. Before that, I had quite long hair growing up, and then I cut it to a bob. So at the state of when I was buzzing it, it was at the length of a bob. And the decision really was for comfort and relief because it was only getting worse, the hair pulling from the scalp and from everywhere else as well. But sort of being stuck in that trance-like state of pulling was really distressing and it was disabling as well. In my everyday life, it would stop me from doing things, caused a lot of problems. And so at that point, I just wanted relief. And so I was like, right, can I buzz my hair? And yeah, mum did it for me. So it was quite a dramatic change, especially considering that nobody else outside of my mum and dad knew about my trick. But gave me almost a sense of freedom after I chopped it off because it felt like, okay, this is a condition, this is going to help me manage it, it's okay. And it almost for me signified a new chapter of not being anxious anymore about what this is, but a chapter of understanding and acceptance.
How often did you find yourself having to shorten it again? I ask because I know someone who loves that feeling of freedom. The urges to pull aren't there. Well, they might be, but they aren't being met with actually pulling because the hair is so short. So she will buzz her hair, once every 3 weeks to maintain that length that she can't pull out. Do you find yourself having a similar pattern?
Yes, definitely. There definitely has to be regular maintenance with it. And when you've had it for a long time as well, this will be my third or fourth year having a buzz cut. You do find that you become very skilled at pulling short hair with your fingers. So it definitely needs to be maintained.
And when you first buzzed your hair, how were your friends? Were they super supportive? Were people at school kind of asking questions about the short hair?
Yeah, at that point, I wasn't in school, but there were a lot of people that I saw regularly who had no idea. So I decided that the easiest way for me to just get it out there was just to make a social media post on my personal page. And I posted a selfie and explained the reason behind it. And thankfully, the majority of people were incredibly understanding, and I was surprised really about how many people admired the change and being open and honest about it. In fact, there were a couple of people in particular who messaged and said, "Oh my word, I struggle with the same thing, and I didn't know it had a name. Thank you so much for sharing." And so it was lovely to see that almost vulnerability in a way could help others as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask. You mentioned before that you hadn't known anybody. Now you have some people in real life. Anybody else close to you that also confided in you and said, "Hey, me too."
There were a couple of people, nobody in the family, as far as I'm aware, but just friends. But I find the majority of people that I know with Trick are definitely on the online, in the online community.
Let's talk about social media. And you have a page that talks about trichotillomania and other things. What led you to creating that new page?
It started actually when I did go to my first therapy session for trichotillomania. It very quickly took a detour because I found out that I've got autism and ADHD. So, between getting both of those diagnoses and also learning about trichotillomania, I really wanted a place that I could share my experiences with the hope of helping others who have similar conditions. And also, I think just a place to have a bit of an outlet. I think, there was a lot of emotions and thoughts to process with the autism, ADHD, and the trick as well. And so the beginning of my Instagram page really was for that purpose, to have a place to share my experiences, get it out in the open and be honest, find like-minded people, and hopefully through that as well, share education and support with others.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. I have been asked certain questions about trichotillomania, the behavior of it and things like that. And some people in the autism community mentioned that they view their trichotillomania as stimming. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I 100% empathize with those people because I definitely think for me, being autistic, plays a big role in my trichotillomania. I know for many people it's very anxiety based or perhaps boredom. I definitely think for those of us in the autistic community, a lot of us feel that for us personally, it's a sensory experience. So seeking out sensory input, especially with the rituals of the hair follicle, rubbing it against the lips or the face, maybe eating the hair, it's all very much a sensory experience. So I definitely think for autistic people, there could be a more significant link between sensory seeking and trich.
And if you don't mind, will you share with us your ritual when you pull your hair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, being honest about it is the first step to acceptance, isn't it? For me, it can start any time of day, anything that I'm doing. There's no particular setting. It's a pretty constant thing. I don't necessarily look for textures. I know a lot of people do, or certain lengths, unless it's my eyebrows. But if I'm pulling from my scalp, I tend to just go for the same spots. So I've got some bald patches around the back. My hairline's a bit messed up. So I tend to go for the same spots. And I'll pull either a single hair at a time, and I'm always looking to get the follicle out with it as well, or I'll pull entire clumps. And the more follicles I can get together in a clump, the better, ideally, because the bigger the sensory experience is than when I rub it against my face or rub it against my lips. And I know perhaps not everybody with trichotillomania experiences this part of it, but I do have the trichophagia, I can never say it right, part of it as well, where you eat the follicle or perhaps even eat the entire hair. So that tends to be what it looks like for me. And then it's followed by all the hair that's around you, or the single pile of hair next to you. And it's very, very difficult to remind yourself, okay, it's okay. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I know what this is. I do find that if I'm having a particularly bad session, to try and break it up and have a bit of a reset, I'll go and have a shower and wash my hair. And that for me, mentally, almost resets. So I think, okay, that's my way of closing it down, having that closure, moving on, try again.
I can totally relate to that. I rub it across my lips. That's like a big thing. I'm always doing that. And I love to either stick it on things, like if it's my eyelashes, I'm sticking them on the back of my hand or my phone screen. And then at the end, I do a little I kind of blow them away or push them away. Do you do that too?
I do that as well, and sometimes counting,
Besides hopping in the shower, what are some other things that you do to kind of either lessen your urges or, stop yourself before you're into that trance fully?
I do try to keep fidget toys around the house, although admittedly they aren't always enough to help. One of the ways that I do find I'm able to control it a bit better is to play guitar, because obviously you're using both hands, you're engaging the senses. So I find that's very helpful. For night time, I have gloves, just thin cotton gloves. And I found that for the daytime, that can be a little bit frustrating if you're trying to use a phone or something. So for the daytime, I have snooker gloves, which are very thin, and they're just made from spandex material, and they just cover the first three fingers. And it means that I can't use those main fingers to pull, but I can still draw if I want to draw or play guitar. So finding ways really to keep both hands busy.
Because you have dermatillomania and trichotillomania, do you find that there are certain things that you do for trichotillomania purposes that also work for dermatillomania, or there's things for dermatillomania that may also work? Do you have different interventions?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the main ways that I manage both of them together is moisturiser. So, for example, eyebrows and around that area, I might also pick my skin as well. So, I find that if I get a load of moisturiser and just slap it on, it then becomes impossible in a way, not always impossible, but less possible to do any more damage. And then I also don't like the feeling of the moisturizer on my fingers, and so that almost is like a repellent in a way. So that's helpful.
One of the only great things that a therapist once told me, because there were a few interventions that I kind of looked at her sideways, like, I don't think you know what I'm up to. But one of them was lotion. And I do not like the feeling of lotion on my hands. And she was like, you don't? Great, do it all the time so that you're not pulling and stuff. I thought, okay, fine. You mentioned before that there were moments where you felt like you couldn't do things or participate in certain activities because of your BFRB. Can you tell me a little bit about some of those moments?
Sometimes I find that, especially sitting down and doing an activity, that can be a trigger. And there can be times when I'm literally spending hours in this state of hyperfocus, and it's extremely difficult to break free from that state once it begins. So it can make it really difficult to just do everyday tasks, get things done, get to work on time, things like that, because you can't stop without trying extremely hard. I found, especially at night time, that can be really difficult. If I've started and there's a single hair, especially in my eyebrows, that I need to get out, and if it's a little bit shorter, I perhaps can't reach it. The only way for me to then alleviate that urge and that need to get it out is to use tweezers. So sometimes that's the only way for me to break that trance-like state. But it's kind of a blessing and a curse with tweezers, so it's a difficult one.
Your relationship with tweezers.
Yeah, it's complicated, which I'm sure you'll understand, because the tweezers, I can't live without them. If there's a hair that I must get out, it has to come out. I can't carry on with my day until that hair is out. And so, in that way, the tweezers are great. It means I can get it. Okay, closure, move on. But at the same time, they're great at getting hairs. And that is not great when you're already struggling and you love the feeling of hair being pulled out, which I do. And so they are, it's almost like a child in a candy store. They are perfect for the experience, and it's very, very easy to get carried away.
And I always mention, like, I don't necessarily always have to use them, but my relationship with them is that I must know where they are in case I need them. Because if I don't know where they are, I'm freaking out.
Yeah, definitely. Before I moved out of my parents' house, the first thing I said to my mum was, right, I have to get my own pair of tweezers. Because I have to know that I've got them there in case there is that one hair that I need to get out and I can't cope without them. So, yeah, I absolutely relate to that.
How do you feel about magnified mirrors?
Oh, they're a difficult one, aren't they? They're definitely a trigger, and I lose a lot of time to mirrors, especially magnified ones. I think a lot of us with BFRBs are very detail focused. And so magnifying pores, hairs, whatever it might be, is like overload. And you just keep going and you keep finding things to either pull or pick or squeeze. They're a death trap.
What do you wish people who didn't have BFRBs knew about BFRBs?
I'm sure probably the most common answer to that question would be it's not just something we can stop. I think if it was something we could just stop, we would have stopped years ago. It doesn't make sense for us to continue with a behaviour that brings us distress if we have the choice to stop it. So definitely, it's not something we can just stop. And also, don't call us out for it unless we ask. I definitely think that can be a big part of the shame, is when you're sat in the lounge watching TV and somebody notices you doing it and they say, Olivia, stop pulling your hair out. I can understand, if I was to ask somebody to let me know, that would be great. I would appreciate that. It would be helpful. But without that consent, it can feel really shameful. So Don't make a big deal of it. Don't call people out for it. Just try to understand. Help us to process what we're feeling. I think that's helpful.
That's something that just always rubbed me the wrong way, was this pressure that people, even medical professionals, were putting on people with BFRBs of like, oh, well, just try harder. You don't think I'm trying so hard? What do you mean?
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Yeah.
What would be some advice that you would give to someone who wants to start sharing about their BFRB?
Do it when you feel ready. I don't think anybody owes anyone an explanation or a story. However, if it is something you'd like to share, there are tons of people out there who will really appreciate your insight and your honesty. And once it's out there, it's not as scary as what it might feel. And I find that the majority of people I speak to about it are full of admiration for the courage it takes to share. And perhaps, like many of us, you'll have other people who didn't know it was a thing and who struggle with it themselves come forward and say, "Thank you so much for sharing." So I say, go for it. And the way social media is these days, the way the internet's going, the way research is going, there's a need for experiences to be shared. So I think it's really appreciated when people share it. And if you feel ready to do that and you feel it's something you would like to do, the benefits definitely outweigh any negative feelings.
What has your trichotillomania or dermatillomania taught you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think for me personally, it's almost taught me to value my worth as a person, not just on appearance. I think society these days is so obsessed with appearance that many of us sadly get sucked into that mindset of, I'm only worthy as a person based on what I look like. And of course, trichotillomania, it does affect the way we look. Many of us have bald patches, missing hair, sparse eyelashes, or wounds from skin picking. And I think for me, it's taught me that it doesn't have to stop me in my pursuit of doing things with my life. It doesn't take away from my worth, from my voice, from my personality in any way. And so I'm able to separate that and think, no, I have all these other qualities, all these other traits, and all these opportunities that I'm worthy of pursuing, and it doesn't affect my worth in any way. So it's almost been, even though it's not been easy, it has been an opportunity as well to branch out in that way and develop and grow as a person instead of just being focused on one aspect of me and hanging my worth on one aspect. It's allowed me to branch out and think about who I am as a person and how I can help others as well.